Welcome back to Oysters, Clams, and Cockles, the former number one Game of Thrones podcast in the realm, now bringing you the best TV shows and movies weekly in an easily digestible podcast packed with laughs by me, Ross Bolin, and my dear friend of almost two decades, Mr. Barrett Dudley. It feels good to have you back in the studio. The phone episode was cool, but it did feel a little weird talking to myself in here.
Yeah, it was weird not to see the emotions.
We've never done one like that before.
It was the first one. Now, people were saying that it was, like, one of the greatest phone calls in the history.
Like, Alexander Graham Bell. His relatives even said that.
Yeah.
His offspring.
Yeah. Interestingly enough, they said that to me, Alexander Graham Bell's relatives. They said that over text. They didn't call.
How about that?
You'd think that they would exclusively use telephones.
You think the Graham Bells would be callers?
Callers, exclusively.
Right.
Some might think.
Not the case, though.
But yeah, the call shall go down in the annals of history. It was great. It was great content, but you're right. It does feels wonderful to be back here in the stewed. Just a refreshed man.
I love how you call it the stewed. The stewed. Not the stew. The stewed.
The stewed, yeah.
I like it. Get that D in there. Well, we have a lot to talk about again today. Big Little Lies season 2 is rolling. Handmaid's Tale is still incredibly dark and depressing. We've got some random topics and a recommendation or two as well. So let's do it. This episode of OCC is brought to you by Lisa. Lisa knows how important rest is to a better life. Lisa is the foundation of a healthier, happier you. And to Lisa, a bed is more than just a place to sleep. It's a place for relaxation and rest. All Lisa products have been thoughtfully designed to go beyond creating a comfortable bed and to transform your bedroom into a sanctuary that you actually want to spend time in. That's what Lisa is going to do for you. That's what their luxury hybrid mattress did for me and Barrett as well, separately. It's the mattress that both of us chose. It's the most comfortable bed I've ever slept on, bar none. It's made with premium foams and springs for enhanced pressure relief with edge-to-edge support, thoughtfully designed with the best of both worlds, the hybrid. The Lisa mattress, the standard, is incredible as well. Their standard regular Lisa mattress. It's the one that I got for my Mimi in a memory care unit with Alzheimer's, which is huge. We very much appreciate Lisa hooking her up with that. It's a great bed. Everything they make is incredible. Their pillows, their blankets. Go to Lisa. They believe all people should have access to deep rest and relaxation, and they make it easy for their customers to know they've made the right choice through their social impact initiatives tied to each purchase. They donate one mattress for every 10 they sell through organizations that work in causes like foster care prevention. To date, they've donated more than 33,000 mattresses through more than 1,000 nonprofits. Their mattresses at Lisa are made right here in the USA. In-home delivery and setup is available. Financing is also available if you need it. Do not miss out, Clam Fam. Live healthier, live happier by resting deeper. Order today. Get 15% off any mattress for a limited time at lisa.com/dragon.
Dragon.
Use the promo code dragon. That's LEESA.com/dragon. Promo code dragon. Keep in mind, you also get a 100-night risk-free trial plus free shipping and returns. lisa.com/dragon. Some news. I only have one thing.
Let's hear it.
You know, Euphoria aired on Sunday.
I did.
I didn't watch it.
So I have not watched it either. It is near the top of my list. We had a lot of homework this week, and I was on vacation, so I didn't get to do much free reading, as it were.
Euphoria is a free read for me.
It's going to be, but I think it's actually going to be my next Patreon column.
Really?
It's going to be about Euphoria.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's got a lot of buzz, man. You know how I've talked about, well, at least I've talked about it on Club Cool. I think I've alluded to it on this podcast. Me and Gen Z,
You have talked about it.
You know that I do not ride for Gen Z. Not yet, anyways. They've got to prove themselves, obviously. Anyway, this show is just about how freaky they all are, basically, in high school.
I thought.
That's what I've heard.
So this isn't millennial scum.
No. This is Gen Z scum.
Gen Z scum.
Oh, baby. Yeah, this is high school, and they're just getting real freaking naughty.
Oh, dude, I love it. Okay, yeah, I thought this was our generation.
No. This is like high schoolers. Oh, now all the parents are freaking out because the Gen Z kids are just going absolutely berserkers.
Just sucking.
Suiciding. Yes, suiciding, zannying.
Come on.
Yes, all the things.
They're all Barbies.
They're absolutely out of control.
Okay, so Euphoria obviously aired right after Big Little Lies, right? Yeah, the 10 p.m. airing of Euphoria, anyway, got less than half of the 1.5 million who tuned in to watch Meryl Streep bite on that crucifix necklace, excuse me.
Oh, God. They are having a good time on that show, aren't they?
They are. 577,000 total viewers for Euphoria. Here's where it gets interesting to me. The viewership figure almost doubles when you take HBO Go and HBO Now into account, because it's young people watching the show.
Yeah.
And these Gen Z scum, they don't watch television. They love streaming on their devices.
No, they don't. They're cord cutters, man.
How are you going to have time?
Millennials are basically cord cutters. You think Gen Z's got cable? Hell no.
You need that cable bill money to buy Xanax. That's what it's for.
Dude, you have to pay for that's for your premium Spotify subscription.
Oh.
So you can get real depressed listening to XXXTentacion and Billie Eilish and Lil Pump.
And then you watch Handmaid's Tale on your Hulu subscription provided by Spotify.
Provided by Spotify.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, anyway, Euphoria, for those of you who have not watched it yet or heard anything about it, explores the lives of high school kids who are grappling with social pressures, burgeoning sexuality, and addiction. And apparently episode one was just like, what's her name, Zendaya? She's just stumbling around on Xanax the whole time.
Pretty much, yeah.
Which, at first, I was like, oh, great, they're just going to destroy my generation. We're all a bunch of pill-popping losers. But now that I know it's Gen Z, I'm in.
No, we are not the pill-popping losers.
What are we?
We are the avocado toast eating, can't afford
scum.
House hipster scum,
yeah.
Because we spend all our money on avocado toast.
Okay. In cars.
Yes.
Teslas.
No cars.
Oh,
we started the gig economy. That's us, baby.
Okay, good. Good to know.
But if we can afford nice cars, then we want Teslas, yes.
Yes, then we want Teslas.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Big Little Lies. Lots of Teslas being driven around Monterey.
Oh,
man.
Teslas on Handmaid's Tale, too. Did you notice that?
No.
Oh, yeah.
Were they really?
Commander Lawrence, when he takes her out to the prison, to the cages, they're rolling in the Tesla SUV.
Jesus.
Yeah.
I don't know how to feel about that.
Dude, all the commanders ride sick Tesla whips, baby. No, I'm just kidding. They a lot of G-Wagons, too.
Dude. I was all in on that. I could have totally bought it. I was going to go home and be like, I can't believe they let all the commanders ride Teslas.
Well, but Commander Lawrence definitely has a Tesla.
For real?
That I'm not kidding.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It wasn't a joke.
No.
God,
no
such
no.
a roller coaster of emotion I'm on.
There's all the commanders drive sick ass, badass black SUV whips.
Got
some
it.
Of them have been G-Wagons. Others,
so not all Teslas.
Others have been Teslas. Commander Lawrence takes June out in his Tesla SUV.
Commander Lawrence does strike me as environmentally friendly.
Well, Nat, of course. He's
fucking
green, baby.
Lunatic Eric. What the hell is his deal? Fuck,
he's
I don't even know.
A soccer player.
But not him, though. Let's talk Big Little Lies, okay?
But both me brothers were soldiers.
Can't combine Billy Madison and both me brothers
were
soldiers?
I just did.
Okay, season 2, episode 2 aired on Sunday, and it was brutal. If you were bored after episode 1 of Big Little Lies season 2, which I don't really understand in the first place, to be honest, but there are some of you who are expressing boredom. And if you bounced, that was a mistake. Episode 2 was a fucking shit show. What'd you think of this thing?
I didn't think it was as good as the first episode.
I thought it was better.
But that's because the first episode had like all the feel-good emotions of like getting the band back together. We were thrown back in this scene.
True.
This was more, this kind of felt like your classic early season episode where they're just like planting the seeds.
Just everything's getting torn apart.
Yeah.
And then you got to put it
back
together.
So there were definitely big revelations. There were some bombs dropped in this episode. And there were some really great like individual moments.
Right.
Just as a whole, I thought the episode, I mean, I enjoyed it. It was great, but it just was, I don't know. It was just it was a mover. It was a move alonger.
This one for me, for whatever reason, it didn't hit me that way. It hit me like, I just kept feeling bombshells.
Okay.
I was like, oh God.
I mean,
it's just
a lot. They did drop a lot of bombshells. They did. Yeah.
First of all, it's doing well. It saw like a 7% rise from premiere week.
That's great.
Which is good. Solid. Over 2 million if you include HBO Go and HBO Now, which is nice. It's not Game of Thrones or anything like that, but it's a good amount of people watching what is an incredibly well-made television show.
Yeah.
Featuring now one of the most famous actresses of all time playing Mary Louise. And I'm talking, of course, about Meryl Streep.
Mm.
So this episode kind of kicks off, what, like Celeste? Remind me, Barrett, did she get a sleeping pill from Mary Louise last week? And then at the beginning of this week, she's driving on fucking sleeping medicine, not knowing what's happening?
Did Mary Louise give her the sleeping pill?
I believe she did.
Okay.
I could be mistaken.
That is a piece that I missed. Either way, she was up on that Ambien.
At 3 in the morning, just cruising around.
Yes.
Everybody's heard a crazy Ambien story, right? You've heard a crazy Ambien story,
right? See, now the Gen Xers, they love their Ambien.
They do.
Gen Zers
Zans.
Love their Zans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ambien is, I've never touched it because I've heard too many horror stories.
Like this.
Like, well, sure, like this, but I guess I can't tell the one I have. It's not my story to tell. I'll just say it involves nudity. and public, and being in public on what's it called? What's the sleeping pill called?
Ambien,
the one that makes you go nuts and hallucinate and do shit like drive your car in the middle of the night and crash it. So early on in the episode, we watch Mary Louise talk to Celeste about her experience with a tragedy. It was an accident involving someone in her family, in the Wright family, named Raymond. She says, right after the accident, after we lost Raymond, yada, 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 I was sure I would not be able to go on. I at first figure, okay, she must be talking about like her late husband, right? Or some shit.
That's what I figured too.
Was the case. It's probably Perry's dad. But later in the episode, we get a flashback to Perry telling Celeste, I had a brother. He passed away when I was 5. And that's when it should have like hit you in the face like, oh, God, did he kill his fucking brother? Oh, God. Could one of the sons be one of the boys that's still alive be like in a position now where maybe he's going to kill a kid? Like, no way, right?
I mean, that could definitely happen.
Oh, I don't know if I can watch that. Like, I guess we wouldn't have to watch it probably.
Yeah.
We'd probably see
but
the
like,
aftermath.
These the two little twins.
They're creepy, man.
They're creepy, and they definitely. They're already borderline snapping on each other.
Borderline. That was a beat. They were going at it.
Yeah.
They go at it in this episode, man. And she's like, you will not be like him. Fucking crazy.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I guess, if Perry killed his brother, at his 5-year-old brother.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Perry continues to become like more and more of a monster as this goes on. Right?
I like it. Dude, that's like, a cool element.
He wasn't just a wife beater.
Right.
He was also a rapist. And now maybe he was also a murderer.
Yes, dude.
He's just a full-on psychopath.
Sociopath. Yeah,
sociopath,
yeah.
Sociopath. Psychopath. Both.
Dude, the scene where he's talking to Celeste and he's like, so you have no family at all? No parents? Yeah. And she's like, no. He's like, no brothers, no sisters? He's like, so let me get this straight. I would get you all to myself.
Yeah.
And her looking back at that moment and realizing like, oh, God, he was grooming me is so painful to watch.
Yes.
Her realization. But damn, I like I love what they're doing with this character post-mortem.
Mm.
That's how you do it. If you have a good character that you need to kill, you better find a way to keep his ass around. That's how it works.
Yeah.
Now, we've seen this done very, very poorly before. There was a show on Netflix about the Florida Keys and that family out there.
Oh, Bloodline.
Bloodline, yeah. Where they tried to keep Danny around in seasons 2 and 3, even though they had, on a little spoiler alert, it didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
This works to a degree so far. Like
they're not
all in.
I think the biggest issue, just to talk about Bloodline real quick, and you're not missing out. So if you don't want Bloodline spoiled for some weird ass reason, then skip forward.
I'll say season 1's is a great season. The rest of it was shit.
Danny was the best character on that show, and the story largely revolved around him and what he was doing
almost entirely. Him coming back home is the story.
Yeah,
yeah,
and I think that's why it wasn't as successful is because they needed him more than we need Perry.
Sure.
Perry is not a main character.
He was secondary.
He's part of the storyline in one of our main characters' lives.
Right.
So it's like, it's easier to kind of keep him around, but not,
she can carry
not
the story.
Right, exactly. But not have to include him too much.
Right. The other thing I was asking myself watching Perry talk to Celeste, thinking about Mary Louise, like, if he did do, I mean, granted, it's very possible that this is all just a red herring or something to distract us, and perhaps he didn't actually kill his brother, or we never hear anything about that again. It's just a piece of information we have about his past with which to make assumptions. But the thing, another question I'm asking myself is like, okay, does Mary Louise know that Perry killed his brother, if that's the case, or did she maybe have something to do with it? We have found out this woman is anything but fucking sane. She's a nut. So it wouldn't strike anybody as shocking if she had anything to do with it. I mean, I love seeing through her how Perry came to be.
Her denial, though, about what Perry might have been,
I
think implies that she doesn't
know the extent of his nature.
If Perry was actually responsible for the death of Raymond.
Right. Which we, again, do
we
not.
We don't actually.
We do
no,
not know. No.
No. We're getting those overtones.
Yeah.
Or you know, that maybe something sinister like that happened. But she's a mom in denial.
Mm-hmm. doesn't believe Celeste was abused.
Many of them are, by the way,
yeah,
when they discover, like, you know.
Dude, you have
plenty of serial killers' moms are just like horrific, you know, criminals. Their mothers, they, you know, they're like, no, couldn't have been him.
Couldn't have been my baby.
Couldn't have been my baby. Not That's my baby. She's doing that thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Not Dahmer's mom, I'll say that. She was a real piece of work.
You following OJ on Twitter?
I am following OJ on Twitter.
You're part of the problem.
I regretfully follow OJ. No, I know. Oh, I know. I know. It was the most obvious I'm part of the problem moment I've ever had, where when I clicked that follow button, I was like, man, I don't like myself right now. But I had no choice. You can't not follow the juice. He's going to do something stupid.
I mean, yeah. I don't know. There was... If he does something stupid, or if he starts tweeting a bunch of crazy stuff,
you'll see it anyway, right?
Then maybe I'll then I'll see it anyway.
Yeah.
So I wasn't immediately out there following him on Twitter. But
fair enough.
You know,
I'm just all of you who don't follow OJ Simpson on Twitter. If you think you're better than us, you're still going to see it anyway.
You have to
block him to be better than us. Then you're better than me. Until then, we're equals.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, okay, the other thing that happened, Mary Louise obviously also does not believe that Perry raped Jane, that his death was truly an accident. She's probably starting to figure out more and more, wait a minute, what was happening? Like, she figures out you were going to leave him the very night he died, she says to Celeste. She's keeping track of all the details that Celeste has left out, as she sort of accidentally reveals them, right?
What do you think Mary Louise thinks happened? Do you think she, like, is already full on, like, my son was murdered?
She
won't say that.
I get the impression that it's more about control for her. And I think she's coming for the kids, right? I don't think she gives a shit about Celeste.
Right. No, definitely not.
It's all just mother-in-law horse shit, and she's, there to protect her baby's reputation, and then I think she wants to take those kids away from her, and she's in a very good spot already. You got mom passing out behind the wheel,
right?
Throwing kids and shit. She's like gathering evidence to use against. I mean, it is bad, the situation with Mary Louise.
That's true. I was internalizing Mary Louise watching Celeste kind of like have all these weak moments, but I didn't actually think that maybe
she's
the real goal is to, I mean, obviously she wants justice for her son. She wants to know what really happened, but
yeah.
I think that's a great play there. If she can't get that, she definitely might come for those boys.
I also am like,
which by the way, good luck with those two little monsters.
I also am like, I'm starting to wonder so it's not like we need to figure out the whole story or whatever. I'm not trying to do that. I'm not trying to guess what's going to happen. I'm just starting to lean more and more toward like, oh God, how far could they take it with this woman? Like, what are they going to have to kill her? Is the Monterey Five going to have to whack Meryl Streep?
I don't know if they have to whack her. It feels like she has to go too, though.
She can't live.
Yeah, well, she will be a problem as long as she is stalking the earth.
Right, and now she's teaming up with the female cop we've seen creeping around.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows what the shit's gonna happen in episode 3? And again, the biggest piece of the puzzle outside of all the crazy shit going on with Celeste is that she has no other family. The Monterey Five is essentially her family, so she's isolated with this cross-biting psycho mother-in-law, and it's really scary. At no point do you think, okay, Celeste has a chance. It's just like Mary Louise is going to win that fight between them two, and mm-hmm. it's going to take more people to try to combat her. Ed finds out, unfortunately, about Madeline's affair in maybe the worst possible way through his fucking stepchild talking to her about it in the kitchen. And he was already upset at the beginning of the episode because Madeline didn't tell him about Ziggy. And he was like, what are we? One of those couples that like keeps secrets? And then at the end of the episode, he finds out she cheated on him, fucking the theater director.
One of the worst ways, I would imagine, to find out.
In your own home.
In your own home and listening to your stepdaughter just like toss it back at your wife.
Like it's not even a big deal.
Yeah.
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 Like, yeah,
oh, it was
dude.
Just this thing that you did last year and that we both knew about and that we've talked about before.
And then
now I'm using it against you. Oh, God.
Ooh, there's nothing worse than getting caught, like, just red-handed and then attempting still through your own sick, like, naive nature.
You got to try. You have to
think
try.
You could still get away with it. Yeah.
No. That is, you do not immediately go straight to the, you definitely heard everything word for word that I just said and I'm caught.
Right.
You got to at least like take
see
a,
what's what?
Take the practice swing there.
So how long have you been there?
Yeah.
How long have you been standing there, Ed? Yeah, Ed heard it all though, unfortunately. So also, after the kid is told that about the affair, what the other kid tells Ziggy that his mom was raped and that he has two brothers. Madeline and Ed's kids are running amok, gossiping everywhere.
Chloe, our little iPod maestro.
Yeah.
She's a gossip queen. And what do you expect, man?
Bro.
She's the most popular person in that class.
True.
And she's got juicy nuggets. She's gonna share those nugs, man.
But this is so much worse than even telling somebody like Santa's not real.
Yeah. They don't understand the weight of it.
Yeah.
We later learn.
He thinks she was salted.
When Ziggy thinks that she was salted.
Yeah, salted.
Now, nobody likes to be salted either.
No.
Nobody likes to have their good name salted.
No.
But it's a much less offensive act than assaulted.
I can't believe she sat there and like explained it to him.
That's a tough scene. And ooh. I was sitting there.
It's a hard one to watch.
That is a hard one to watch. And I don't, just as far as like real moments go, like I cannot even fathom what it's like to try to tell your child that means more to you than anything in the world that that's how they came to be. Like that is super, super tough.
Yeah. That's, you go to therapy the rest of your life for that.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one of those things that buries deep down in your brain and fucks you up forever. It's sad to watch, but it's also...
It is.
Man, what I loved about this episode was, like, most of the high emotional moments were negative. Like, it was bad stuff that was happening, but there was so much power in each one of the scenes, and each unfolding. Like, whether it was Bonnie and her fucking nut mom putting... What was that? Like, a chicken bone in a... Jim?
I guess it was supposed to be some like
voodoo,
some
shit?
Voodoo stuff.
Like crystals and spell casting trinkets?
Pretty much, yeah.
She's a mystic of some kind.
She's a mystic. That's a good word for it.
And Bonnie's a hippie.
Yeah. But she does not want
dark magic in her home.
You don't want no part of this, Dewey.
It's not addictive. It makes sex better. what a fucking great movie that,
yeah,
by the way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Highly underrated comedy. Dewey Cox.
Just to jump forward, what?
Walk hard.
Do you think that Ziggy meeting the twins there at the
end?
Yes. That seems dangerous.
Okay, well, we brought it up already, so might as well. Now I'm worried about Zig.
Yeah.
Because
oh, yes, absolutely.
He strikes me as contestant number one to be like double murdered by the psycho twins.
The twins, they seem to be like they're like super chill with it.
Right.
I don't think that they're going to be super chill with it. They're
no like bringing, kid ever.
They're like bringing presents and coming over for the play date.
Dude.
And like, I don't think that is, I think they're on their best behavior.
Yes.
I think they're about to be on their worst behavior.
Like Drake.
Yes.
Like thank Drake. You for working that in. No, at the second they walked in smiling, I was like, oh no, because that's so unrealistic. Every kid ever who's been told, your dad has another child from another woman.
Oh yeah, you
is
automatically.
Like, oh, fuck that kid.
Yeah.
And that woman. And all y'all. No, I'm serious. Like, it's a weird possessive thing with your parents. You don't want to find out your parent has another child that's not you. That takes away from you. Perry certainly didn't want to find that out. He fucking killed his brother because he needed more attention. maybe. Allegedly. But yeah, this is terrifying. I'm worried about Ziggy getting got by these twins now. And that would be just about the worst fucking thing. Here's one thing that keeps me sort of in the saddle. Like, you know, from completely freaking out. This show does have a level of light to it that Game of Thrones didn't.
Mm-hmm.
You need light. It has to stay enjoyable. There needs to be something. You cannot kill Ziggy, right? You can't murder.
No.
Another child?
I'm not actually worried for Ziggy's life.
Just his well-being.
Just as what? Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a more realistic concern, I think, and I'm with you on that.
Because I think what is maybe more interesting that's going on there is like Jane and Celeste are like doing their absolute damnedest to like stay on the up and up, to keep their relationship good and civil and be friends and deal with the all cards it, that yeah. they've been dealt, basically.
Yeah.
But there are moments where there's like a little tension brewing there too.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, like that's just another incredibly difficult position for
yeah.
both of these women to be in.
Her husband raped another woman.
And so I think that if the twins are basically start to like bully Ziggy or pick on him or hurt him, then that escalates the potential conflict between Celeste and Jane. Whereas if they kill Ziggy, then it like there's no conflict.
Blows up the show, kind of.
Please get these two kids into, you know, a jail cell. Thanks.
Yeah, that cannot be the way that ends. But it certainly is an interesting like plot twister there
mm-hmm.
to keep things getting weirder and weirder. I will say, I thought the runaway best performance of the episode was Laura Dern.
She is, so far, she's like the MVP of the season.
Did they nominate her? I know they nominated Meryl Streep's ass. They better have nominated Laura Dern, dude.
Meryl Streep? She wasn't on it last season. You talking about last season?
Oh, no, I mean for this season. Have they not done that yet?
No,
is that
no,
not
no.
how that works?
Uh-uh.
Oh, those are last seasons that they just did then. I saw something about HBO nominating people for the Emmys.
Oh, what they're doing right now is like called the FYC stuff, like for your consideration.
Okay.
I don't know, because I have not been paying close enough attention the last couple weeks. Like, I know Game of Thrones is for your consideration for the Emmys.
Okay.
I don't know when the cutoff date was for shows.
I'm an idiot. She won Supporting Actress last year.
Laura Dern did.
Yes.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Which, how the fuck did I not remember that? Anyway.
I'm guessing
she should get it again.
For some reason, I want to say that shows have to begin airing in May to be considered. So I think Big Little Lies would actually be next year's Emmys.
Well, this episode
but I'm not,
alone.
But I don't know. But yeah, Laura Dern is awesome.
I thought she ran with Streep, dude. That was next level shit. Her unhinged, fucking crazy, I will not be poor.
I will not be rich.
Yes, was incredible.
With her like just like saying that through the glass in the prison is awesome. And
how good is her husband?
Props to the wardrobe stylist here, because when her husband gets arrested for securities fraud, she is in just the most like just the most gauche Gucci fit you could possibly be in.
She's
it's like this big, you know, down puffer coat with like this big like cape style collar, the little Gucci double G fanny pack around her waist,
yes,
and then Gucci print pants. And you just like, that is the outfit that you wear when you will not be rich.
Yeah. Yeah, dude. I couldn't believe how, I mean, I really did think she was transcendent.
Even in episode one with her print, like doing the photo shoot with the song going
out by
on.
The pool. Yeah.
Yeah. At the pool. Like what the song is like. This is my house or something.
I don't know, but
it's my house.
Fucking awesome.
It was, oh,
she's
God,
just doing
so
power
good.
Moves.
Yeah,
just pose, yes. pose, Vogue. Yeah, she was fucking great.
But she is all the, this is so fun to watch because it's got like a soap opera element of it. And all of these actresses just get to like really like ham it up. They get to be extra.
A little bit, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, and I know that I don't know, but I'm picturing the cross-biting scene with Meryl Streep and Reese Witherspoon, and like I don't know how many times they shot that, but I'm like picturing like the director be like, they do a couple takes kind of on script, and then they do a couple where the director's like, okay, now just like do something different, like have fun with
get
it,
get weird with it
yeah. Right, and Meryl Streep like comes up with that little like putting the cross like right on her chin
yes.
thing, and it's like it's silly, but it works,
dude. The mannerisms like that are real character pieces for you to work with. Like, she almost definitely just made that up on
yeah.
the spot.
Oh, yeah.
Right,
yeah,
and it fits, though. That's the thing, is I mean everybody has little mannerisms that they do. There's little things that everybody does. Some of them are intentional, some of them not, some subconscious, some on the forefront, and you realize. I loved that she played with that little thing, and it's like I don't really get why people are giving her a hard time for like overdoing it, sort of, right? Like, that didn't strike me as a cheesy thing.
Has there been some of that?
A little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit of blowback. Yeah. Like, oh, Meryl Streep chewing on a cross. Come on. It's like, what, dude? What? It's a fucking character. It wasn't that big of a deal. She didn't take it off and light it on fire. She put it in her mouth. Who cares?
Whoa, wait. Was the backlash that it was like...
No, not like that.
Oh, okay, okay.
From like Christians?
Yeah.
No, no. Well, I'm sure they're there too, but... No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying backlash was like, over actor?
Yeah, that she was like hamming it up a little too much. Yeah. No, that's why we like the show, I think. We've got A-plus list actors, and they're getting to just like have fun. Yeah. And you remember...
And there's a little bit of them in each one of these characters, too. You got to keep...
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
And I remember, or I just recalled via something I heard or read about... you know, about the show, mm-hmm. that Meryl Streep said when season two was kind of like first being put together,
right.
She didn't even need to see a script. She just wanted to be a part of this deal that Reese and Nicole and Laura Dern and Zoe Kravitz were doing, like, because it, like, this looks awesome.
It does, yeah.
I just want to be a part of this. I want to jump in here and do this. Like, don't even need to see the script. So, like, this is... You know, I know that they take this show very seriously. They're making quality television. But there's an element to this where that type of kind of extra little stuff, the fact that these actresses are kind of getting to play around like this,
right.
That's what makes this show fun.
No.
And that's why they're all in on it.
Every artist ever does better work when they're enjoying themselves.
Yes.
And these girls have found a project that fits them perfectly. And if you remember watching the Emmys and shit last year, there was something about those girls at each, not just the Emmys, at the fucking Golden Globes, at the whatever. Every time you saw Reese or Laura or, I always forget, the Eyes Wide Shut.
Nicole Kidman.
Anytime you saw one of them, you just felt the whole presence of the whole squad almost. Like... The Big Little Lies girls stood out at stuff as the Big Little Lies girls. Because it's such a powerful group of women that have been in so many different things in Hollywood over the course of so many years.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was probably a big part of Meryl Streep wanting to be a piece of it.
Like, totally.
It is a cool thing to be on. And it is awesome that it's all female leads and that it's Reese Witherspoon's project. And she's got all her best friends involved. And now arguably the greatest female actress of all time is a villain in it. It's a really big deal.
Mm-hmm.
It's cool. I'm sad more people aren't watching it, honestly, because it's been that good so far. Klein, Laura Dern's idiot husband that is a creature of want.
Gordon Klein that gets popped
is that for
his name? That's his name, right?
Yeah, that gets popped for white collar crime, essentially.
Securities fraud, insider trading, wire fraud. He was shorting some stock. He had a tip. You know.
What did he say? He wanted a, what was it, G5? Or he wanted a
Gulfstream.
A Gulfstream. He wanted a plane. Yeah. God, what a good character. He did a great job, dude. He is good at playing scum.
Dude, he's the best, sleaziest, just like tech.
Yes. You knew he was going to do
billionaire
shit.
Douche ever. They have his character.
The fuck's he doing with the train
well
set?
Well calibrated. I don't know, but it works.
God, I can't wait to find out what this dumbass did. That's a cool wrinkle. I love that they threw this in there. Now the FBI's involved. Renata's going nuts thinking that maybe the FBI is working with the cop that's looking into them. The whole thing is really ramping up two episodes in.
Mm-hmm.
I would say I feel like at least three or four. Like we're three or four deep. We're two deep. I'm super happy with that. Progress is good. Psyched. Loving it so far. If you're not watching Big Little Lies, that's a mistake. Any other Big Little Lies notes, Barrett?
Oh, let's see. I think that's all my notes. We pretty much covered. I mean, what did you think about Bonnie's mom kind of giving it to the husband?
I thought she sucked. I thought that was the worst character in the episode.
Was her mom?
Yes. I didn't get the fit of it.
Yeah.
I don't like the mom who knows best for her daughter thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's always bugged me. Like, where have you been, bitch? We've been watching your girl live and then have to kill somebody, and now you just show up and you're like bossing people around. He called her, man, and she was still a bitch about it.
If anything maybe was felt forced about the plot or the acting in this episode, that was probably it.
That was for sure it for me, yeah. I don't know. It didn't, considering how well everything else hit, it didn't hit as well. I was like, eh, but you're gonna have weak spots.
Yeah.
That's the way it goes.
Yeah, man. Fun show. Can't wait.
Let's move on.
Let's move on. Let's do it.
Today's episode of OCC is also brought to you by Burrow. Burrow is rethinking how people shop for and live with their furniture by making high-quality sofas that are customized online, shipped for free in 1 week, and set up in minutes. I got their original armchair with ottoman, and the options I personally chose for my armchair were the color beige with dark wood and low arms. That's how customizable these things are. And it arrives so fast. It's incredibly easy to assemble, even for someone who's mechanically challenged like I am.
You're a low armer.
I am a low armer. Mm. I like a good low arm. And it's quickly become the number one seating option in my living room for not just me, but also for my dog, Bruce. It's become like his de facto throne. And fortunately, it is scratch and stain resistant. So if your dogs or kids are jumping on it or puking on it or pooping on it or whatever, you're good. You're fine. It also has a built-in USB charger, so you never have to get up. It's a sofa that grows with you. Burrows are easy to set up and disassemble. You can also make it bigger at any time. The fabric is free of harmful chemicals and a frame made from sustainably sourced hardwood. Complement your sofa with four unique pillow collections. You can pick your style, mid-century, bohemian, industrial, rustic. Their soft, hand-woven fabric covers and plush inserts on those pillows are great. Burrow was recently named one of the best inventions of last year by Time Magazine, and you can get $75 off your award-winning Burrow sofa by visiting burrow.com/clams. That's burrow.com/clams to get $75 off your order. Thanks again to Burrow for supporting the show. Okay, so on to Handmaid's Tale. The Handmaid's Tale, Barry.
The Handmaid's Tale. Are you all caught up?
I'm all the way caught up, sir. You've got through four episodes. All the way caught up.
Okay, good. Good, me too.
Yeah.
I went back to back last night. I did the unthinkable.
Oh, sir, I did three in a row.
Oh!
Taylor doesn't get it, dude. I tried to explain to her. I was like, this is not a binge-watching show. This is like Black Mirror.
Did you do that last night? Did you watch three last night?
Maybe the night before the weekend? Maybe the night before? It was over the weekend.
Yeah, no, dude. No, sir.
She doesn't agree.
She was my max.
She was like, ooh, one more. Ooh, run it back. Just keep going. That's like, I was like, hey, what the fuck? Like, it's 9:30. You know what I mean? It's dark outside and in my heart. I can't do this. Yeah, I'm caught up.
Okay.
People thought I wouldn't be, for the record.
Well, you've got a lot on your plate.
I take offense to that. I watch a great deal of television.
Before we jump into some of the plot points here, I just want to know. One episode in, we talked about last week, we felt positive about some of the elements that were kind of like lurking and that could be, you know, played out over the course of this season.
Yes.
Now we've made a big jump. We did three more episodes.
Yes.
So we're essentially a third of the way through the season. Do you feel hopeful still? Or do you have more fears about what's happening?
I am a little more worried than I was.
Okay, same.
Because we've seen more of the same elements fall back in, and I'm like, what the fuck? It's the same stuff.
Yeah, I'm officially worried here.
Mm-hmm.
This show is beginning to operate a little bit like a network drama.
No! It is a little, though.
And here's why I say that. Obviously, the content is a lot darker. We have sex and nudity and curse words and
murder
and all that stuff that we could only get on a premium subscription or cable. But
I Googled murder.
The fact that we continue to play the same beats over and over and over again, even when we change out the characters.
Mm-hmm.
So like in episode 3 or 4, we get June being degraded by a commander.
Yes.
And then attempting to figure out said commander, leading with sexuality to like see if she can manipulate him with that. Like, how many times did we see that with Fred over the first two seasons?
Right.
Many.
It got repetitive with him, frankly.
And so, like, the fact that we keep kind of like falling back on these beats or watching June kind of be degraded and belittled by a commander, like, yo, I've watched enough to know that Gilead does not like women.
Yeah, I don't.
So that scene like doesn't really serve a purpose to me,
dude,
except for to like continue to play these same notes.
That's my complaint.
And then where we do get like the development, it's stories that don't really mean as much to the bigger picture. So like we get Emily reuniting with her son and her wife, and that's like good story, good character, but it doesn't actually matter for the world at large.
Man,
for like
the fourth one. The most recent episode is where I got real worried again.
Yeah.
Because I was like, wait a minute. We spent 20 minutes with Emily, man. It treated her as if she was June, and we were watching June be reunited with her wife and child. That's what they treated it like.
Yes.
We don't know Emily well enough for that to work.
I mean, look, I enjoyed that part.
It was great.
Of
it
the
was,
episode. But it, and they were some of the more impactful scenes for me.
They were for me too.
Like I like watching her like, you know, be connected with the son again and have him ask her to read and like all that stuff like
brutal. But
and it's a piece, it's like a piece of light that they're kind of giving us, but it is such a, it's not the main story that we're conditioned to care about here.
That's the problem.
So it's in the main story, what I'm getting is, oh, hey, Aunt Lydia is abusive and is a crazy person who also kind of has like a sick, weird fondness for these handmaids. Like, yeah. I know that. I don't need to see her beat Janine again
yes.
to know that. And I don't know what I like.
That, so, I keep finding myself asking, what was the point of that scene?
So same. And that's
for that, too many scenes.
That's in my notes here, especially about this Aunt Lydia scene. And like when I was trying to, you know, just read and suss out some stuff about what people are thinking about Handmaid's Tale right now.
Suss it out.
One thing that I saw was a headline that says we are getting an Aunt Lydia flashback episode. And like now I get it. Like because oh, that's why you brought that up again, because you're going to give me a whole episode about Aunt Lydia. And why are you going to do that? Because it gives you an episode to burn where you suspend plot and you don't have to move any further. We just get to like... We're not doing that anyway. They'll write it off as like, well, we're developing this character. But like, man, I know everything I need to know about Aunt Lydia already.
I was about to say, what in the fuck could we possibly learn?
She's a 3D character. She's got gray tones to her. She obviously has like this weird thing where she does care and yet... She is out of control, power hungry, and abusive, and like that's her deal. I don't need a flashback episode to know more about that.
We know how she came to be that. It's that she was. We can all assume Aunt Lydia at some point had to make some very difficult decisions based on the fact that she's a fucking female, having to train the other females on how to be subservient baby making robots, basically. So we know that at some point she had to trade in her morals and her values for whatever the fuck reason. I don't need to see Aunt Lydia's background story.
Yeah. And so then, you know, I'm considering that scene and it happens in front of some of these other, of some of the ladies, the commander's wives. And I say, okay, maybe this is meant to solidify Serena's determination to help women in Gilead.
Okay.
And then segue into one of our final pieces of episode 4, is Operation Bad Plan, which they just completely stole from Game of Thrones.
Yes.
Where they're going to try to, quote unquote, see the baby again.
What the f-
And so that makes me think that Serena is on the downslide again. At the end of the episode where we finally make strides in seeing her fight for the right side.
I swear to God, if she backslides, I'm out.
That is... So... This next episode is a massive turning point for me.
So this Wednesday, tomorrow, today, rather.
Because, look, this is a bad idea. I don't like the storyline here.
It's a stupid plan.
And nobody, there would be so much blame to pass around here on Luke for agreeing to meet with anybody.
Why would he?
With Canada for allowing this meeting to happen. I swear to God, if they get the baby back to Gilead,
dude,
I'm going to finish out the season, but I might find another, like, at that point, we maybe should find another show to talk about, because that will literally reset us to where we were at the beginning of season 2.
Right.
With June stuck in Gilead with two babies to try to get out of there. And no progress being made, because Serena will have the baby back, and she won't want to lead... Women.
The rebellion.
She won't want to help in the rebellion if she gets the baby back. I swear to God, if they get the baby back.
I want my baby back, baby back, baby back, baby back.
That cannot happen.
I don't think it will.
I don't think it's going to.
That would be too bad.
But if Gilead gets the baby back, baby back, baby back. Baby
then we're done. Back,
then I think we're done.
Yeah,
because
I think we are too.
It's bad writing, bro. Yeah. And
that's all it is.
It's aggravating because we started to get some of the cool stuff. Like
we did. What the fuck? Why? They were on the right track with a couple different things.
And even a few in season 4, I love that June figures out, you know what, if I make this decision, I get to pick people for their belly. That was a great twist that I did not see coming.
Yes.
That was
huge.
Great.
Like, that's good writing. Well, well done.
And that is obviously what I care about at this
and
point.
And I thought...
Like, let me see that play out.
That's the story we want.
That's the story we
want.
But
just that. Fuck all this nonsense. They just needed to snowball that moment. That moment felt... like, when she's there, and he's like, you're gonna pick, and she's like, no, I'm not. I was almost done right there. Because I was like, what is happening on this fucking show? Then she finds... Because everyone... How stupid do you have to be to not immediately realize, oh shit, if I get to pick, I'm going through all the, I can learn everything I can about all these women and pick the ones that are most helpful. If you didn't immediately think that, you're a moron. And she didn't immediately think it. And then.
I did not immediately think it.
I mean, in her situation, not ours as viewers. No. I mean, her situation, with all that she's been through, the amount of people she's seen slaughtered, she knows there's no chance in hell that if she doesn't pick, any of those women see the light of day ever again. She made the decision, obviously, but it took too long. Realistically, that would have taken a few minutes, maybe. Seconds, even.
I I'm okay with the delay there. I liked that, because that's... I kind of agreed with her thought process there. Because... She was trying to get one over on the commander, and then he immediately like gets her back in her place.
Yeah,
and her knee jerk reaction is like, no, I'm not gonna participate in this game that you're now trying to play with me.
Right,
like you're not gonna pin the deaths on me.
I guess that's where I had a problem, because it's you.
It's obviously you and Gilead. So
she ends up picking anyway. It's like she's learning the same lessons over and over.
Bigger question. Was that what Commander Lawrence had in mind the whole time?
That's a good question. I'm very lost on him. There's too much waffling. Like, I need solid momentum one direction or the other with characters. It can't be so much waffling back and forth. Like with Serena, like you just mentioned, your worry now is that she'll backslide into being on the side of Gilead.
I'm very, very worried about that.
Pick a fucking side, lady. What's your problem? It wouldn't be this difficult to pick a side.
No, and I'm having a hard time getting over the fact that they finally gave us the episode where like Serena is on June's side. She's going to like she's realizing everything. She's getting it together. June's helping her get more power with the commander. They're like going to start playing this game.
Yes.
She's gonna start leading these women again.
They're having conversations about it.
And then at the end of the episode, it's like, oh, but now we might go try to get the baby back. God, no.
Why would they need...
No! How would they get the baby back? Why would Canada let anybody from Gilead into the country on any type of diplomatic mission?
Your question there, looking back on even them allowing the commander to come into Canada last season or whenever that was, we would never... No one would do that. That'd be like inviting Hitler over for brunch to talk it out and see what happens. These are terrible... terrorist people.
Like if some North Korean refugees made it to the States and then Kim Jong-un was like,
I want
hey,
to come meet.
I just want to come meet the refugees just for closure.
No big deal.
Let me just, you know, say my goodbyes to them. I'm really happy for them, but I just want to say goodbye. The U.S. would be like, are you fucking out of your mind?
Just hang up the phone.
Like, no. What Canada... Don't you just won an NBA championship? Do not fuck it all up by letting Gilead come steal your baby.
If they take that goddamn baby out of Canada, it's on. It is free. And what is that dude doing with a baby at a protest? Doing interviews with a camera woman.
Yeah, that also dumb.
Who's the camera woman? She's like, so what's your deal? You a protester? And he's like, he's like, yeah, I'm protesting. She's like, is that your baby? He's like, yeah, it's my daughter. Her mom is in Gilead. I'm protesting. I just don't get why he was answering questions at all, why she was asking questions, why the news network was focused on this one black man and his child for as long as they were so that everyone in Gilead got a clear shot of it. Like, I'm very unclear on the technological situation in this whole fucking world that they've made. Also, the media I'm confused about. But most of all, I'm confused about why Canada would allow anyone. What is happening in Chicago?
Chicago is... They've taken back Chicago.
The Gileadans?
Gilead.
The Gillies?
Yeah, the Americans had it. Whether they took it back from Gilead or not, I'm not sure. But they took Chicago, and so now they have a bunch of prisoners, basically.
Got it. I didn't realize.
And when they were talking about the salvaging,
uh-huh.
I think that means like mass executions to show strength, basically.
Oh, shit. Okay.
And that's why, and Commander Lawrence was like, I stepped in and made it so that we're sending them to the colonies instead of doing a salvaging. And I was able to get 5 to come in as Marthas.
Okay. Damn. So do you think in that dude's like heart, I guess, is he good or bad? More good or bad?
I have no idea.
Then that's another one of the problems right there, is that you and I are both have no fucking clue what to make of Commander Lawrence.
Well, that's clearly the point 4 episodes in. That they're not giving it to us.
Already did last season too, though, with this fucker. Like we saw enough of him last season to know he was ambiguous and weird.
Well, then that's something that we can point to, is like the continuous one step forward, 2 steps back.
Yeah.
He shows himself to be a good guy, he helps get the baby, he helps get Emily, he helps get June out, and then June steps back in, and now Commander Lawrence is like back to being a freak show.
And I guess if they have an explanation for what we're supposed to take away from that, other than people are inherently complicated, like, then somebody hit me with it, because that's the same problem I'm having with Serena. It's the same problem I've had with June. We're getting the kid out. I'm getting out. No, I'm not getting out. The kid's going. I'm staying. Or in the case of Serena, I'm going to help. I'm a good girl now. Oh, wait, never mind. I love Gilead and my husband. Or it's just, we get it. People are complicated. These are very complex situations and relationships. We know all of that. Show us some actual decision making, one way or the other. I'm sick of seeing people go back and forth. That guy, Commander Lawrence, being the probably worst now, even over Serena.
So we can one thing that I meant to do a little bit more before this podcast, but I'm kind of doing it on the fly right now, is figure out what the selection of the book meant, Darwin's Descent of the Descent of Man.
Mm.
So I've pulled up one thing here. In The Descent of Man, Darwin wrote that by choosing tools and weapons over the years, quote, man has ultimately become superior to woman.
Yes.
So that the Descent of Man, I think we can largely take away, is basically Darwin's, you know, theories about why men are dominant and
it's how superior to women. Yes. It's how men evolved and how women and men and the races of men and sex and all that shit.
Okay. So I think we can say a few things. I think Commander Lawrence does believe that men are superior to women.
Okay.
It was an interesting note that he gives about Emily, that the reason he liked Emily is because Emily was legitimately, like, he thought that Emily was legitimately, like, bright and intelligent.
Right. That was weird. We keep getting these weird moments from this dude that I'm like, wait, what? Now, what are you rooting for, sir?
So it's really hard to know. And
is he even like, even if he does come straight up and say like, all right, I'm obviously on the good side now. It's hard to sympathize with a character who invented the scenario
that is the architect of Gilead, essentially.
So what the shit? Yeah, they keep telling us that. So yeah. I'm struggling there.
The show, like, it continues to just kind of run in place, mm-hmm. a little bit. And it obviously has these themes that it's very attached to, one of which is just people being, not being black and white.
Right.
Like, people having good and evil. Even in our main protagonist, June, we get it referenced again in this episode that she, like, was a homewrecker. She broke up a dude's marriage.
Her
husband.
Oh, and, yeah. I totally forgot about that, yeah.
You know? So yeah. It's like... Nobody is all good or all bad.
Sure,
and that switches every 2 minutes. And so like, they're definitely doing that with Commander Lawrence. It's just frustrating to have them essentially like continually hop back and forth for many, many, many episodes without ever revealing anything or giving you a straight answer.
You need those moments where things click, right? Unless you have those moments where things click, like we had that moment where what was it? We referenced it earlier. Something clicked in this episode where we were like, ah.
With June choosing able to choose the 5 Marthas, yes. And like
great
figuring
twist.
Out how to use that.
Yes, yeah. Great twist, great click. Clicked into place and it made you go, oh, that doesn't happen enough. It needs, if you're going to give us all this confusion and waffling and weirdness, we need more payoff. And the payoff moments are what is lacking for me.
Yeah, we talk a lot in Game of Thrones over the years about like fan service.
Yeah.
And it has like a negative connotation, but at the end of the day, you also have to keep fans happy. You want them to keep watching.
It needs to be good.
As a limited series, as a mini series, as maybe one season or maybe even two seasons, I think you can take a lot of chances and do something unique and original and maybe just kind of like put yourself out there and be like, here's my statement. Interpret it how you will.
Right.
But if you're going to make, you know, a television show over many seasons, like, then yeah, you need some narrative. You need some narrative that actually goes somewhere.
Yeah.
That gives us something.
Right. It can't be the same themes and, the same
and
lessons.
It's not
the same...
doing that right now.
I'm with you. The real frustration for me is that was my complaint last season. The fact that we're still trudging over the same bullshit is like, okay.
How does Taylor feel about it?
She seems to like it more than me.
Yeah.
Think it's higher quality than I do. We haven't talked too much about it, mostly because, like I said, we binge watched like three of them and then nobody spoke the rest of the night because it was too fucking dark. But I'm guessing she likes it a little more than I do. I'm just upset because it seems an incredible waste of an incredible backstory. Just the scenario that they have to play with, that this author gifted them in this book. It feels like they're blowing it a little bit.
Yeah.
And we're four in, like you said. That's deep. That's enough
It's pretty deep.
To start judging. I am completely with you that if this next week, we got to see some things happen. Some more clicking, please.
Yeah. And I mean, ultimately, all I really need to see for this next episode is that Gilead doesn't get the baby. back.
Thank you. Baby back, baby back, baby back. Any other notes on big...
I'm looking through your notes. Yes, Andoud as Aunt Lydia. She's just wildly... Like, she's like... We talk about character actors.
Yeah.
She is an amazing character actor.
What the fuck is that lady's deal?
But I also am like, when she comes wheeling up on her little thing...
Yeah.
Like, I laughed at that.
Dude, she's good light comedic relief, too.
And her voice... Now, girls!
Yes.
Like, she's...
There's some humor in there, for
there
sure.
There is. But this is... I guarantee you the showrunners are not intending for Aunt Lydia to be like a caricature of herself.
Maybe not, yeah.
And in this episode, we're especially with like the out of control, you know,
beating, came off that way a little, yeah.
It was like, okay.
But okay, what do you think's happening there with her though? Is it that things have gotten so bad that she's breaking
I don't know.
I mean, I know this all sort of started once she got fucked up by Emily, right? But come on, like
dude, last note, this show refuses to kill anybody.
That's true. It's weird. Everyone's still there and alive. People are losing hands and shit and fingers and...
Arms, all sorts of...
Eyes.
Can we not get one baddie?
Kill a character one time.
Yeah.
Kill somebody.
A bad one.
A bad one would be nice. There are plenty to choose from, writers. Not a Canadian. And don't take the baby.
Not the baby.
Wow. I didn't think we'd tie in a dinosaur reference today, but we just did.
Not the baby.
Do you ever watch that show, Dinosaurs?
Yeah.
Fucking creepy, that show. Robot dinosaur world?
Animatronic, yeah.
Nah, that was a mistake for us to watch.
I can't remember what, but if we pulled up the voice actors, you'd be like, oh, what? That dude was a voice of somebody?
For real?
Yeah.
I don't want to know.
I don't know. What you got next? That's all I got for
The only other thing I wanted to touch on very briefly was my next guest needs no introduction with David Letterman's show on Netflix, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I've been working my way through all these, and they're pretty damn good. It's basically Letterman being like, all right, I'm not ready to not work. I am incredibly well-connected and a very talented interviewer. I'm going to do no work at all and show up and work, basically. There's no prep at all. And he makes them very awkward, as is sort of tradition for him. It's weird. It's like you're enjoying it, but you're also like, Dave, do a better job. But it's also great. It's weird. He's a very strange interview style. The two that I wanted to discuss today, there's a ton of great people he interviews. Howard Stern, Tina Fey, Obama. I need to watch Howard Stern and Tina Fey still. Obama was great. Kanye West and Jay-Z. Are the two that I watched recently sort of back to back.
These are separate episodes, right?
Yes. Yeah. Totally separate one-on-one interviews with David Letterman in a studio audience. And for the Jay-Z one, oddly enough, the guy who made like This Is 40 and Funny People and Heavyweights and what the shit is that guy's name? He's like the biggest comedy producer in the game, movie-wise.
Judd Apatow.
Judd Apatow is in the crowd, which is like he doesn't know Judd Apatow's in the crowd, and he's trying to make the audience guess his guest, because nobody ever knows who the guest is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And someone's like, Judd Apatow. And he's like, Judd Apatow? Why the shit would I have Judd Apatow on stage? He even makes fun of him. He's like, well, would you get all dressed up and go out on the town to see Judd Apatow? And then like 5 minutes later, he's like, holy shit, Judd Apatow's here. And Judd Apatow's like, hey, remember when you shredded me a few minutes ago, you dick? And I can't figure out. I watched it a couple times. I can't figure out if it was staged.
Huh.
I think he just insulted the man. That being said, these interviews are unbelievable. Kanye is the rambling, incoherent psychopath you would expect. Very little of what comes out of his mouth makes sense, which is very frustrating.
Have you heard the rumor that he is doing
performance art?
Like Andy Kaufman style performance art?
Years ago.
Oh, years ago.
Like 2 years ago. When he was in the middle of one of those intense meltdowns, mm-hmm. I read a thing that was essentially what I have taken it to be that's a Kanye West fan theory. That's people who want to hope.
Want that, yeah.
He's just mentally ill. That's all it is. He's bipolar and manic and whatever the fuck else he has. There's nothing wrong with that. I'm just saying he is mentally ill.
I don't want to be, I never like to be hyperbolic about Kanye West because Lord knows the man has his faults, but I genuinely feel like he is Vincent Van Gogh. He loves to boast about being like the next Walt Disney or Henry Ford or whoever, but those are not really the people that I think he aligns with.
He's not a captain of industry.
No, he's not. He is
fucking psycho artist.
He's a tortured, wildly unstable artist.
Yes.
And it's always been one of the most interesting things about him that he can make such cohesive music, especially when you listen to an album like Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy.
Right.
And yet he almost can't form full sentences to articulate what he wants to say.
It's incredibly bizarre watching him struggle to make any type of, because almost every question Dave asks him, his answer has nothing to do with what he was asked. And you never actually get to the end of his point.
Right.
And that's every question he's answered for about 4 years now. That's getting old, frankly. It was kind of sad watching an interview where you don't actually get very much information. The information is that he's a nut. And and I mean that in the most respectable way possible. As somebody who has a lot of mental illness shit in his own brain, I don't mean it to be insulting. I just mean maybe people should stop trying to interview Kanye because he's not saying anything. On the other hand, his former mentor / big brother, Hove, was incredibly informative. And to boot, we get a nugget. Dave asks him, Kanye West, what's the deal? Would he let me interview him? He even asks, I think. And Jay-Z's like, you should have him on. He's brilliant. And that's what leads to the Kanye interview.
Man.
So he interviews Hove. He asks him, what's the deal? And Jay-Z explains it as two brothers having a falling out, essentially. Like, it's still his brother. He still loves him. But they had some type of differentiation that they haven't recovered from on the personal level. Now, he in no way makes it seem like that's not a possibility or anything like that. And you do get the feeling that probably Jay-Z's probably a little bit of taken aback by how long it's been since he heard Kanye say something that made fucking sense. Like, he's probably a little bit like, God damn, I wish I could help this dude a little more. But it's a fantastic interview. If you love rap, if you love Kanye and Jay-Z, go watch My Next Guest Needs No Introduction with David Letterman. And then, like I said, he's got all these other fantastic... The thing that's cool about David Letterman is that he's David Letterman. He has access to the most famous people in the entire world. So that's who he interviews.
Any of our listeners that are our age or older probably have more, know more about David Letterman than any of our listeners younger than us. We're right on that line.
Yeah.
And I, my parents always, we never Leno on. It was always Letterman
right.
in the house.
I think we were a Letterman fan. I never watched Leno. I always saw Letterman.
Your dad strikes me as a guy that would be a big Letterman guy.
Okay.
So I'd wager a guess there.
I think I've seen maybe Jay Leno I saw his show once or twice, mm-hmm. and I saw Letterman probably 200 times.
But Letterman was always known as like the tough interview.
Right. Like he would ask the tough questions.
Yes. And he basically wasn't going to just let celebrities come on and plug their shit and throw them softball questions
and, yeah.
and do a song and dance and he wasn't going to ham it up with him. He was the harder hitting, going to have a real conversation with you. He didn't take shit.
He made shit awkward.
He made shit awkward all the time. So it's cool that he has this platform to kind of like,
do whatever the fuck he wants.
Continue to play out those type of instances where he can,
at the end of
have
the Jay-Z
type of interview that he wants to have.
At the end of the, well, first of all, in the middle of the Jay-Z interview, suddenly you're in Rick Rubin's studio and wherever the shit, and you're like, wait, what? And then Jay-Z is not involved in that part of the episode at all. It's just you getting a behind the scenes look at how Rick Rubin produces a record with Lucas Nelson and some incredibly talented country chick.
Interesting.
And it's fucking awesome. I don't know why they didn't make that a separate episode. It was weird being in the middle of the Jay-Z one, but whatever. The point is, what was your point? Because it brought me to my point.
I was just talking about Dave Letterman, about how he's a heart.
Oh, so at the end, he asks Jay-Z, well, not really. He brings up cheating on your spouse, and he brings it up by calling himself out for a past indiscretion years and years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks basically very... sort of nondescript, I might add. He just leaves it as vague as possible. He just says he made a horrible mistake and that he's trying to draw Hove out.
Yeah, yeah.
And it doesn't work. Jay-Z's like, good for you, man. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's really, really awkward. He's like, he tried to get him to bite. You can tell they probably told him no questions about the fucking cheating, mm-hmm. the near divorce experience. And he went and asked, he didn't ask. Maybe that was the loophole. No, yeah. There was no fucking question. He essentially said, he says, you went through some shit recently. I went through some very bad shit several years ago. Here's how it kind of went down. And Jay-Z's like, yeah, I get that. But he doesn't really touch on it, which I will say this. I don't really get acknowledging it at all if you're not going to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just talk. Dude, you got to talk about it. You have to. Everyone knows already. It's weird that you won't say anything about it. You need to do a fucking interview. This would have been the opportunity. I think Hove should have taken a stab at talking about it with Dave. I think it would have been very quick and short. I think he lined it up at the end of the interview on purpose so it would just be a few minutes. And this was a good opportunity that he missed. And for that, I'm sad. But all that being said, the end of this conversation is... Watch My Next Guest Needs No Introduction with David Letterman if you're looking for more interview-style content.
Would you start with Jay or would you start with Ye?
I'd start with Jay because I think it's a good contrast to the insanity that follows when you watch Ye. And I feel like he does a pretty good job of explaining Kanye as a person so that you go into the Kanye interview sort of knowing, knowing that you're dealing with like a disheveled creative genius lunatic. But yeah, that's all I have.
All right.
And that will do it for today's episode of OCC. Huge thanks to our sponsors again for supporting the show. Make sure you support them to support us. And if for some reason you don't want the greatest products known to man, which are provided by the sponsors of OCC, then you can support us directly by going to patreon.com/oysters, clams, cockles, where we have, two episodes have already become available in June, exclusive episodes of this podcast available only on Patreon just for members of the Mollusk Militia. Both of those episodes are us discussing The Last Watch, HBO's Game of Thrones documentary, kind of surrounding the final season of Game of Thrones. And then we've got more coming this month, Barrett.
Yes, we do.
Have you made a final decision?
Yeah, I don't think that we can ask people to go spend their hard-earned dollars
on Dark Phoenix.
On a movie night out to see Dark Phoenix.
We can't.
The reviews are so bad.
It's kidding.
More and more is coming out about like just the terribly botched production and all the stuff that was happening behind the scenes. And like this movie never had a chance. It's a total flop. And I think are you in on Booksmart?
I'm very in on Booksmart.
I think we should go see Booksmart this weekend.
Please shift to Booksmart.
Let's shift to Booksmart. We're going to record on Tuesday our Patreon episode,
oh,
First
God.
Movie Club. Booksmart.
Next week. That's huge.
Yes.
So when do you want to drop that? Like, I'm just trying to think of what gives people the opportunity to make sure they get... Well, I guess it doesn't matter. You can listen once you've seen it, right?
Yeah.
So we'll record next Tuesday.
It will come out next week.
Okay, next week. After we record.
After we record it.
Wow.
So not on Tuesday.
Do not go watch Dark Phoenix. You'll ruin Sophie Turner for yourself. It's a $200 million budget.
I don't want you to go spend $15 on the movie ticket and then have
an
$8 beer plus your $6 popcorn. And before you know it, you're up to $20, $30, $40 and you watched a bad movie and you're going to blame us.
And then it's our fault. Yeah. I don't know what happened here. I don't know how badly, I don't know how they messed this up as badly as they did. Simon Kinberg, I've got to imagine that's the producer perhaps of this movie. Oh, he's a screenwriter, producer in television. So he's the guy who directed this thing. And he's trying to take full blame now for the shittiness of the movie. Saying, that's on me, put it on me, like
wow.
Blah, blah, blah.
Wow, okay.
Which I'll say this for him. That shit never fucking happens. I have never seen a director come out and be like, I fucked up.
Me either.
Which is a big admission. It's also a very dangerous one if you're running around with $200 million in studio money. but that being said... He's like full on acknowledging, quote, it is clearly a movie that didn't connect with audiences that didn't see it. It didn't connect enough with audiences that did see it. So that's on me.
Man.
Which it is on you, bro.
Yeah.
It is. So good on you for recognizing that.
I do appreciate the acknowledgement.
He fucked up our movie club, though. Let's be real.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank God we got something good to fall back on.
I'm very much looking forward to Booksmart. This has been high on my list anyways.
Yes, me too.
I think there's going to be a lot to talk about because we love a good coming-of-age movie.
We do love a good coming-of-age movie. So hit patreon.com/oysters.
Plus, I'm writing about Euphoria.
And Barrett's writing about Euphoria. I need to find something to write about this week.
Yeah.
Something good. I will. patreon.com/oysters, clams, cockles. Join the Mollusk Militia. More details coming in the coming couple of weeks about what you'll see on Patreon in July from us. Follow us on Instagram at Oysters, Clams, Cockles. On Twitter at Clams and Cockles. We're also on Facebook.com/Oysters, Clams, Cockles. I don't know what you're meant to do with that. Throw us a like or whatever. follow me, Ross Bolen, at WRBOLEN. That's my handle everywhere. Instagram, Snapchat, Twitter, at WRBolen. And go listen to my show, The Ross Bolen Podcast. It's my other podcast where I talk about all manner of things that interest me, from history to animals, pirates, current events, sports, mental health, serial killers, technology, music, and more. I interviewed a very talented musician named Rob Baird earlier this morning, and I was actually intended on it being a premium Patreon episode just for the dues-paying members of the RBP gang, as I call them. And it was so good that I had to put it on the normal feed. It's one of the best episodes of anything I've ever made or done. It was one of the most enjoyable hour and a half of my life. This dude and me were complete strangers. I had never met him before. Sitting down before talking to him, he's a dude who's from Memphis, Tennessee, he's a singer-songwriter. He's run the Nashville gamut. He's in Austin, Texas now grinding. And he sings as a song at the end. And that's all I'll say about that. He's an incredible artist.
Does he know Project Pat?
I don't know. Do you assume everyone from Memphis knows Project
Pat? I do
assume,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Crunchy black on that ass. Anyway, Barrett, where can we follow you and hear more from you?
Follow me at Barrett Dudley on Instagram and Twitter, and check out the Club Cool podcast wherever you're listening to Oysters, Clams, and Cockles.
Club Cool.
That's the podcast that meets at the intersection of style and pop culture.
Yeah! And that's it. That's it for today's show. We will be back next week. You'll get your regularly scheduled ad-based OCC, and then you'll get a little bit of Patreon because we're going to see... What's it called?
Booksmart.
Booksmart. Which I am not. Street Smart would be the movie about me. Adios, muchachos.